You are listening to The Raelish Report. Here's your host, John Friend.
All right, folks. Welcome back to another edition of The Raelish Report. This is your host, John Friend. Thanks for tuning in today. Joining me on the line is Mike King of the informative and hard-hitting website TomatoBubble.com. Mike is one of the leading voices in the alternative independent media and is also the author of numerous important books, which we will be discussing during this brief introductory segment today. Mike, welcome to the program. How are you today, sir?
Oh, John, I'm doing well. Good to talk to you again, my friend.
Yes. Yes, always nice to chat with you. Always good to catch up. It's been a while since you've been on the program.
I was just thinking
Some things have changed. Mostly they've remained the same. You know, we continue to do this work, and there's definitely been some interesting developments, which we'll talk about. But just to get started, I guess, you know, what's new? I know you've got some new books out. I was hoping we could maybe briefly discuss some of your new books and what you're doing on your website during this introductory segment.
Certainly. I try to produce a book or booklet. As you know, many of my works are a smaller size, maybe between 100, 120 pages. And I like to keep it that way because I stick to just the basics because I want a maximum readership. You know, most people will pick up a 500, 600 page history book and then never get around to reading it. They fall asleep. My works are lively, they're full of lots of pictures, and they get right to the point. I don't waste and I don't mince any words. So some are full books, like Planet Rothschild. That's my epic. That's 600 pages. But most of them are booklets of 100, 120 pages, give or take. My most recent one, which came out 2 months ago, and it's selling very well. The feedback I've gotten is people enjoy it because it simplifies what is a seemingly complex subject, and that is the subject of monetary policy and how the Federal Reserve rips us off night and day, year in and year out. And the title of that book is Bancarotta, which is Italian for broken bench. And you'll have to read the book to understand why I gave it that title. But that's a very fun and easy to understand allegory, which is set in kind of medieval times. Northern Italy, Germany. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm looking at tomatobubble.com, and you can find a link to purchase that book right on the main page on the left hand side in that sidebar. So, yeah, definitely be sure to check that out. When was this book released?
Bancarotta came out 2 months ago.
2 months ago. Okay.
Yeah, November and December.
And it's dealing with monetary policy, as you mentioned. That's very interesting. Now, I want to say, I think since the last time you've been on, you've also published Mind Side of the Story. Is that the book you published prior to Bancarotta?
I believe that would be right, the most recent prior to Bancarotta. It came out in the summer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's my favorite book, or one of the favorite works that I put out there, although I'm not really the author.
Right.
Only less than 10% of the content of my inside of the story is my own commentary and an introduction. But basically what my inside of the story is a collection of, I want to say, about a dozen or so World War II speeches and publications that were put out either by Adolf Hitler or the German Foreign Ministry. And I also throw in one from the Emperor of Japan. And it deals with all of the major initiatives of World War II that we blame Hitler for, such as the start of the war with Poland or the invasion of Holland and Belgium and so on. And it is his – there are his Reichstag speeches or their press releases put out by the German Foreign Ministry. And it is the German explanation for everything they did during World War II. That's why I call it Mind Side of the Story, and that's all it is. There's no embellishment on my part. It's just giving Hitler a chance in his own words to give his side of the story. And what I point out in the introduction to that book is why don't we ever get to at least hear his side of the story? I mean, I defy you to find a single high school or college history book that carries any excerpts from any of these speeches.
I don't think you can find it.
It's mind-boggling.
Exactly. You just are not even allowed to entertain what he had to say and entertain the German perspective of anything from World War I or World War II.
That's right. And the point I make in the introduction is I show that some of the most notorious serial killers in American history, Charles Manson, Ted Bundy, the Son of Sam, all of these beasts, these fiends, these murderous monsters were afforded television time on primetime U.S. television and newspaper interviews to explain what they did. So I say, if we can hear what Manson has to say or Ted Bundy has to say, why can't we hear Hitler's words?
Right. It's a good point.
And I tell you, once you read my side of the story, you will see why. Because not only is it a totally different version of events, but what I find, John, is when people are telling the absolute truth, what they say or what they write, it has a certain ring to it. And you read it for yourself. I mean, this man was a straight shooter. Mm-hmm. And I add some facts that confirm all the claims that he makes to show that he's telling the truth. But again, my contribution is probably less than 10%. Mm-hmm. It's basically Hitler in his own words, and people need to read it. It's called Mein Side of the Story. You can find it on Amazon. Look for author page of M.S. King or go to tomatobubble.com.
Right. Yeah, and I purchased the Kindle edition. That's another thing I like about your work is you have a lot of it available in Kindle format, and that's simple and easy to pick up, at least for me. I mean, I enjoy purchasing Kindle products, and I have that one, Mindset of the Story, on my Kindle right now, and it is good. I mean, yeah, I've read a lot of it. I haven't read the whole thing. I mean, some of the speeches I've read in the past already, and I've cited them in some essays I've written, including Hitler's Final Testament. At the end of the war, when, you know, he was getting ready to commit suicide, which I'm assuming you think actually really did happen. I know there's a lot of people that say that he actually escaped.
Yeah, but, I am totally convinced that he committed suicide, and I have a whole piece on that.
Right.
If you Google Tomato Bubble, Hitler Argentina hoax, you'll see the argument against it. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyways, but I mean, his Final Testament, for example, is very powerful. And see, this is why we're not allowed to ever even consider what Hitler was saying or what National Socialism was really all about. We're never even presented a coherent explanation as to what exactly the Nazis were all about. Who are the Nazis? What did they stand for? You know, we're just told that there were these evil white supremacists, murderers who murdered all the Jews and all the other, you know, quote unquote undesirables. It's never presented in context or even rationally. It's just this like horror story they present to us.
Yeah, it's really a cartoon. And once you step out of that world and look back to where you came from, I mean, I'm assuming at one time you bought all that nonsense. I don't know. I know I did up until the age of, say, 35 or so. Mm-hmm. Once you step out and look back, you almost want to laugh if it wasn't so sad. But it's interesting that you bring up that Final Testament of Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Because although I was totally anti-communist and right-wing conservative and into conspiracies and all that, I always assumed up until about 1998, 1999 or so that Hitler was a monster. And mm-hmm. I came across on the internet, I think somebody sent me the link, someone that I had gotten into an argument with in a chat room, and I said he's Nazi scum, blah, blah, something like that. And he sent me a link to the Final Testament, in essence, the suicide note of Adolf Hitler. And it's only about a page long. And when I read it, it hit me between the eyes like a lightning bolt. And it didn't instantly convert me, but it really intrigued me. And I said, wow, this is not what I would have expected to read. I never knew he had a suicide. Excuse me. I never knew he had a suicide note. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was the loose thread, and I kept pulling and pulling on it. And it opened up a whole new world for me. But that is a powerful document.
And yes.
No one, nobody contests it. It's an actual historical document. It's called My Final Testament, in which he vehemently denies responsibility for the war, and he put all on the Jews and the British industrialists, and so on. And he goes over how hard he tried to make peace and avoid the war.
Which he most certainly did. Everything he was saying, that was the thing. Everything he was saying was absolutely true.
Well, you know what's interesting? In my one book, probably my best-selling book is The Bad War, as you know. I reproduce old headlines from the New York Times, of all places, which reviewed Hitler's peace offers. Mm-hmm. He made peace offers before the war, after the war broke out, and after he had seemingly won the war, before the U.S. and Russia were involved, the whole time, even when he was the absolute undisputed controller of continental Europe, he was still issuing offers of peace in which he offered to just withdraw from all those occupied countries, which he was forced to occupy, if only Britain would stop fighting. He wanted nothing from Britain. And these are undeniable, and you could find some of these in old American newspapers.
Right.
I mean, it is incredible the lengths that he went to. He was almost begging for peace.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Yeah, exactly. And I think, I think an objective look at Hitler and National Socialism and, you know, everything that they were doing, everything they were saying and you know, doing diplomatically will prove everything you just said. So there's a really good book I read a while back, and I've interviewed the author on two separate occasions. It's called Hitler's Revolution by Richard Tidor. It's just a phenomenal book. And all he does really is quote NS officials and NS newspapers and public policy papers and whatnot and NS propaganda and just to describe what they were all about from a foreign policy perspective, from, you know, a labor or workforce perspective, from a health perspective, you know, their views on race and their views on the Jews and many other subjects. And I mean, yeah, when you do that, it's you quickly realize that these were some of the most capable, competent, and intelligent men our civilization has produced. And they were really telling the truth, and they were really trying to deal seriously with the problems facing society. And they did.
Yeah.
And they did, you know, solve a lot of the problems that were facing society, at least for the short period of time they were in power.
Yeah, I mean, what they achieved in those few years was nothing short of miraculous.
Right.
Probably the most stunning economic revival in world history, as well as a cultural revival. You know, a lot of people aren't aware of this. And when they read some of the quotes in books like, you know, my books, they're amazed. But up until 1937, 1938, some of the biggest people in Europe, in Britain, in France, were praising Hitler big time,
right,
for his achievements. So this is right up until the eve of the you know, the outbreak of the war. There's simply no denying the miraculous revival. I mean, maybe you'd have to go back to the Renaissance days to compare it to. It wasn't just economic; it was psychological. It was the happiness of the German people. It was moral. It was cultural.
Right.
And it's just an amazing story that has been erased from history. But Hitler was immensely popular. Mm-hmm. We're talking like 99% approval. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody has achieved that degree of, you know, love from his people since. And you know, and to attribute that to German propaganda, that's false. Because when Hitler came to power, you know, he still, much of the country was either supporting democratic socialists or communists. So they were, he did not have the absolute majority, had a plurality when his party came to power. So he had to win all of these liberals over. And he did in a year or two with results. So
yeah,
that's a lot.
And you're right. You're right in that this side of the story, mine side of the story, is not really presented. Certainly in our mainstream, you know, in our educational establishment and you know, in our Hollywood movies about World War II, certainly. But in school, in our history books. But now, with modern technology, we are able to compete with this narrative, with this very controlled environment. And we're able to publish books like Mind Side of the Story, for example, and present this information. Could you talk about the importance of you know, living in an age in which we're able to do this?
Well, John, frankly, without the internet, this this little spark, this tiny little flame of truth, this little torch that we carry, I won't even call it a torch. In the big scheme of things, it's a match, but at least there is a flame. Without the internet, that would have ceased to exist by now. And I know certainly for myself, I would never have stumbled across this information, nor the resources that I needed to put together some of my major works without the internet. I mean, one would have to go to a physical library and spend his whole life trying to dig out these nuggets that are just a mouse click away.
Mm-hmm.
So the internet is huge, and which is why we're already seeing in Europe, you know, aggressive attempts by the usual suspects to begin regulating it and controlling it.
Yep.
But unfortunately, I mean, it's great, but still, in the big scheme of things, the great mass of the population is moved by the electronic idiot box and by the Jewish newspapers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we definitely got to change that. I mean, we're doing some serious damage, I think. I mean, you know, just in the past year, it seems like everybody's numbers are going up, and more people are realizing that the mainstream mass media and political establishment is dishonest and corrupt, and is deceiving them on so many fronts. And they're going to websites like therealistreport.com and tomatobubble.com and supporting our work and consulting, you know, the alternative independent media, which is doing a much better job. I mean, see, that's the thing. Like, we really have the ability to compete and to challenge their narrative and really take it down. And I think that we have the ability to do that, and I think we will eventually do that. I mean, I feel very optimistic about this because, I mean, fundamentally, we have the truth on our side. We have the ability to get it out there with the internet and with all these other avenues like publishing books and producing podcasts and videos and whatnot. So, you know, I feel good about this.
Yeah, well, I'm optimistic in that respect that we are definitely freeing, liberating more and more minds.
Mm-hmm.
And fewer people trust the mainstream media. That is true. But it's, you know, it's still a daunting challenge that if we are to win, I believe it will be for future generations. I mean, you know, the great scientist Nikola Tesla, you know, speaking on a different subject, but still he made the point. He said and he was talking about the theoretical scientists that he didn't agree with at the time. He says,
mm-hmm.
you know, they can have the present. The future belongs to me.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the way I look at things. I like to think maybe 40, 50, 60 years from now, my work and your work will be discovered by a new generation of people with a different way of thinking, and hopefully serve as the foundation for a better world.
Boy, I sure hope so.
Yeah, but that's what we work for.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when the Rothschilds started their dirty business 200 years ago of taking over the world, they knew they weren't going to live to see it, but they worked for subsequent generations to see it.
Sure.
That's kind of the attitude we have to take.
Yeah, I agree. Now, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. This was just a, you know, sort of a brief introductory segment. The next segment is going to be much longer. It's only going to be for subscribers to therealistreport.com. So, guys, if you're listening, I'd encourage you to go over there and check out the subscription feature to enable yourself to listen to the second segment. But, Mike, could you just briefly plug your website? And you also have a subscription feature to tomatobubble.com. Could you talk about that and you know, just mention your website, and then we'll go ahead and conclude this segment?
Sure. Tomatobubble.com, the contents of which are probably 80 to 85%. Free, but there's some really good stuff that, well, you need to support me if you want to get that, and that includes full access to all of my PDF versions of my books and a subscription to the daily where it's almost daily, anti-New York Times. People will like this. Every day I pick out an egregious, dishonest, or incomplete article from the New York Times, and I go through it line by line, and I destroy it. And it's really comical. People really enjoy it. But you have to subscribe. And I enable people of all backgrounds to subscribe. It's a minimum $5 a month to get the anti-New York Times and all the PDFs. But if you want to help me out, you could do 7, 10, 15. It's up to you. But for a measly $5 a month, it's worth it to get all the pay-per-view PDFs and the anti-New York Times.
Yes. Okay, very good. Yeah, and I'll have, of course, I'll have links over to your site. You know, when I post this program, and we'll have much more to talk about in the second segment. So, Mike, thank you very much. We'll go ahead and wrap this up, and we will be back here in just a minute.